Well, hello, everyone, and welcome. If you are looking for the call with my special guest, Juliana Hever, you are in the right place. So, Juliana, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, great. Excellent. I know we're all so eager to get started, but I must mind my manners and start with some introductions. So let me tell you a little bit about myself first, and then we'll move quickly into introducing our guest. This is Lanny Muehlrath, and I'm known as the Plant Strong Fitness Expert from LannyMuehlrath.com, and I'm the creator of Fit Cookies and the Body Transformation Formula, and I'm also a fitness expert for the Dr. John McDougall Health and Medical Center, and I specialize in helping women who struggle with weight and energy to transform their bodies without hunger or exercising like a maniac so that they can enjoy eating freedom and a healthy, happy relationship with food, eating, and their body. So you can see why Juliana and I get along so well. So you can find more about all of that and all of my projects over at LannyMuehlrath.com. And I also have a free gift there for that you can download. It's my Body Shaping and Fitness Breakthrough Kit. So there's lots more there for you. But since we're so excited about getting started, I'd like to turn introductions time to telling you more about our special guest. So here we go, about Juliana. Juliana Hever, MS, RD, and CPT. So that means registered dietitian and certified physical therapist. Is that correct, Juliana?
No, certified personal trainer.
Personal trainer, okay. Also known as a plant-based dietitian, is a passionate advocate, I can vouch for that, of the miracles associated with following a whole food plant-based diet. Juliana is the author of The Complete Idiot's Guide to Plant-Based Nutrition and is also the nutrition columnist for Veg News Magazine. All right. She's the co-author of the upcoming book. I don't know if you guys know about this. She's got another one coming up, The Complete Idiot's Guide to Gluten-Free Vegan Cooking, which is going to be published December 2011. So watch for that. We'll have to have another call. Juliana counsels a variety of clients in her Los Angeles, California-based private practice, including elite athletes, adults, and children with various nutritional and or medical concerns. Now, Juliana has lectured extensively throughout the United States. You guys, this is so true. Every time I hear from her, she's off to someplace else to present at weren't you at Veg Fest in Pennsylvania? And my gosh.
Yes.
And I know you do the McDougall weekends, too. And she's published in prominent journals, magazines, blogs, and newsletters. And also, she co-produced and starred in the documentary To Your Health. She, for this project, and I bet some of the people on the call have heard this, she interviewed a host of the plant-based world's most respected doctors and researchers to bring this important information to film and television audiences. And also her work as executive director at EarthSave International has provided an opportunity for her to bring whole food, plant-based nutrition to the forefront of efforts to improve the current global health crisis. Gosh, and I was just reading in your book today, 2 out of every 3 American adults is overweight.
It's even more than that now. It's 66. It's about 67% total. So it's like 34% obese. And then I think there's an additional 6%, or included in that is about 6% of extremely obese.
Oh, man.
Pretty much like morbidly obese, yeah.
Okay. Well, Juliana, here's her education. She received her bachelor's degree from UCLA and master's of science in nutrition at California State University, Northridge, where she also completed her dietetic internship. She's taught as part of a Dr. T. Colin Campbell's Cornell plant-based nutrition certification program, which I recently was certified in, excellent program, and worked as a clinical dietitian at Century Club Doctors Hospital, in Los Angeles, correct? So you can learn more about Juliana at her website, theplantbaseddietitian.com, or also her toyourhealthnutrition.blogspot.com. Whew, so Juliana, again,
yes.
Welcome to the call. Did I about cover
Thank
it?
You. You covered it very well, and then some.
Okay, well, before we go on, what I'd like to do is kind of give some logistics to the call, just kind of outline for everybody how this is the hour is going to proceed. So some logistics before I go on. The lines for everyone have been muted except for, of course, Juliana and myself, so we can converse, and that helps keep down background noise and interference. But if anyone on the call has a question that you would like to present to Juliana, you can push star 2 on your phone, and then your question will be placed in the queue. Like if a question comes up, and even if we don't take questions until later, if you're kind of in the lineup, then you know I see your hand raised on my dashboard, and you would be first up in line, so you'd be able to come in and ask Juliana your question. So the same thing is with the webcast. We have many people on the webcast, so if you're on the webcast, you see that there is a place to type in a question and send it forward, and I would be able to present that to Juliana during the call. So you can do that anytime. And another thing, if for any reason my connection is dropped from the call and I just disappear, don't go away because I'll just call back in and the recording of the call will continue. So that'll all work out. So, Juliana, any questions for me? Does that sound like a good plan?
I'm ready, yes.
Okay. Well, first, congratulations on this amazing book that I can tell was not a small task to put together, because as I just said, you know, I just got my copy this afternoon and it's just so full of content. It seems to like answer, like you said, it answers every question you might have, and on face value, just doing a quick glance through, I would have to say that's true. So to start off, and I bet other people on the call are curious about this too, can you tell us a little bit about your history with diet and nutrition, like, you know, your personal history and how you arrived at this plant-based diet, and then how that came to turn you into a dietitian. So first, tell us how you came to be a plant-based eater.
Okay, well, it's a long journey, actually. I started many years ago when I was a teenager. I read John Robbins' book, Diet for New America. And after I read that book, I'm like, okay, I'm going to be a vegetarian. That's it. I was convinced. It was amazing. It was more of an ethical decision. I didn't know anything about, I mean, beyond the basics of nutrition. So I started just eliminating animal products. I didn't know what to do. I just took out all the animal products. And I was, you know, eating Diet Cokes and rice cakes and fruit rolls. I didn't know, you know, a teenager. So lo and behold, you know, I started getting sick a little bit more often or so. My parents made me feel that way, and they actually were concerned about me, and they said, we can't let you keep doing this. It's not healthy to be a vegetarian. So they called up their friend who was a nurse, and they all took me out on this, like, intervention type of dinner, and they made me sit there and eat this piece of steak with a ring of pineapple on top. I'll never forget, like a teriyaki steak. And it was the most disgusting thing I've ever had to, and I don't even know how many bites I took, but it was painful. And that was it. And I went back to being afraid, because she told me, the nurse told me, you're going to be sick, you're going to be, you know, you're going to be anemic, you're going to be this. And it scared me. I mean, like it as it does to a lot of people around the world.
Well, you said you were a teenager, right?
I was a teenager.
Well,
so, you know, I kind of let go of this for a little bit, and I always knew in the heart of hearts that this was the right way to go. And I read like crazy. I was always reading all these books and health books. I was obsessed with health and nutrition books. My grandma, when I was a kid, used to say to me, why do we eat bananas? I'd say, potassium. You know, like she would literally quiz me on all the little foods that we were eating. So I got it in my blood. I loved that stuff. So fast forward a few years, and I was an actress, and I was you know, going out on auditions all the time for acting and for modeling, and my agents kept telling me, lose weight, lose weight. In my dance, I was a dancer, and the dancing teacher told me to lose weight because I wasn't the typical, you know, 80-pound, 5-foot-9 dancer.
Yeah.
I was not like that, and so I was always on every diet. Me and my mom would be on the 4-day diet, the 3-day diet, the cabbage soup diet, the this diet, the that, and we tried everything, and I was always struggling with my weight. And I was never overweight, mind you. I could say that now, but, I was never thin, like actress thin. So I got used to everyone asking me that. And then finally, at one point when I was in college, my agent said to me, or my manager actually said, here, I want you to go see this personal trainer. She'll help you lose weight. I'm like, okay. So I went to
this
trainer.
Now, wait, during this time, were you doing a vegetarian diet, or was this after the intervention and you went back to standard diet?
No, this is years later, and I had gone back to standard. Like I said, I had tried every single diet that was out there in the meanwhile. So, yeah,
okay.
I kind of let go of that, even though in my heart of hearts, I knew that that was not the right place to be.
Yeah.
But I didn't know better. So I was in undergraduate as an actress at the time. And ultimately, you know, I went to this trainer. I loved the training. I became a personal trainer, and because I loved it so much, and I just found this passion about actually helping people and getting people fit and feeling great. So it became this second passion of mine while I was acting. And then I noticed everyone's asking me all these questions about eating and nutrition, and I would answer questions based on what I knew and, you know, what you learn from personal training school and all that. But it wasn't anything substantial, and I felt like this, I shouldn't be giving out nutrition information when I don't really have the scientific background to back it up. I didn't like that. So I enrolled in graduate school in nutrition, and 7 years later of studying and working full-time as a trainer, I finally finished. I got my dietetic internship and got my registered dietitian. I became a registered dietitian, finished my master's, and had kids. So I got this great background in organic chemistry and biochemistry, microbiology, all of the really good science in statistics and being able to analyze research, to objectively analyze research. And that was the best gift I got from grad school, because even though I was fed all this information, my whole program was based on what the USDA funnels through any university and all schools, and you know, from the Dairy Council and all those places that proudly sponsor the American Dietetic Association. So I was getting all that generic information, all the while, you know, still hesitant, and not believing that we really needed 4 glasses of milk a day to be healthy. That just didn't sound right to me. So I finished grad school, and then I started reading and looking at the science, and all of a sudden, because I was able to say, no, I really don't need meat to get the iron, because look at this research here, I started building this confidence, and I started realizing that I don't need to listen to these generalized guidelines. I don't think that those are necessarily right. Mm-hmm. And what was even more exciting was that as I was applying this information to my clients, because then I started, you know, I was still personal training, but I was starting to take on nutrition clients. And as I started applying the information I was learning, I realized that people were getting healthy. We weren't just managing disease. We were stopping disease. We were getting people off of their medications. We were reversing diabetes, stuff that taught to me in school was impossible. So I just kept going and going and learning and learning, and I just fell in love. And obviously, I changed my diet. So this was about 4 years ago, and I changed my diet, at the same time, and the rest is history. I found something that actually works.
Wow. So that's really fairly pretty recent. A long history from starting out a while ago and then having kind of a sidetrack and going back to it. But how did you find, when you did your, internship? Mm-hmm. How did that work? Because I know it can be hard to find someone compatible with where you were going. What did you come up with?
Oh, I realized how flawed the system was. I realized that I was working at a hospital, and I would go in to, I would go into a patient's room, and the patient would complain to me that their roast beef sandwich was rare. Meanwhile, the patient had just gone through a quadruple bypass. I'm thinking, okay, how am I supposed to help this person if the focus is so wrong? But my job was really to go in there and provide education and then leave. So it was a very blatant slap in the face about this is how our system is, and I realized that this is why we are all sick and overweight and obese.
Mm-hmm. Well, congratulations on that. What an interesting pathway, and look where you are today, and really having emerged at a place where you can be so helpful to so many people. So that's how you then came to the diet, and then you came to being a dietitian as well. So let me ask you, let's go start moving toward the book again a little bit so we can kind of get into this juicy content. What do you think, in your experience, what is your most common question, aside from the where do you get your protein? And I loved your answer in the book. That's a great line. But what's the number two question that you get most often?
I would say, you know, it's funny because we address all of those big questions in our movie To Your Health that just released 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago. But I'm going to give you all the titles of the different chapters in the movie. Calcium, how do you get your calcium? Mm-hmm. And then supplements, do we need supplements? Don't I need a lot of supplements if I'm going to eat this way? That's a very common question. Iron, you know, iron deficiency anemia. We talk about weight loss and metabolism. But a lot of the questions seem to be very consistent throughout. I get all sorts of questions all the time. It's fascinating.
It comes from a place of deficiency, but then you can see why that, because of what we have going on with the food industry the way it is and pushing certain kinds of food like the high protein and the Dairy Council and all of that, how that is so much in the forefront of our culture that to see those missing, it starts to bring people up to question. So that's what's so exciting to me, is see more and more people like what you're talking about, what I'm talking about, in terms of, no, there's a whole other way to look at these things, and it's not all necessarily true.
Right.
So how would you summarize your nutrition philosophy then?
Okay, I would say that it's about eating whole, as close to nature as possible, mm-hmm. as close to eating the majority of your diet, to base your diet, to have a foundation in whole plant foods, to eat the rainbow every day, and to, mm-hmm. and to, you know, have some variety and find stuff that you love to eat. So there's two concepts that I always kind of try to put together. There's a spectrum. It's how much of the good foods, the health-promoting foods, the foods that have all the, you know, antioxidants, phytochemicals, fiber, vitamins mm-hmm. and minerals and water. So the more of that you consume, the healthier you're going to be. Along with the secondary factor is the less amount of the health-demoting foods, the foods like that are rich in saturated fat and cholesterol, the foods that don't have any color or artificial colors and flavors and all that. So it's basically like this a yin-yang. I really like to think of it as a yin-yang. The more good that you put in and the less bad you put in, the better your health is going to be ultimately.
Oh, I like that. I like the yin-yang. So there's a way that you can kind of, I like to think of it like as crowding out those things that are not health-building with those that are.
Right.
Well, if someone wants to get started on a plant-based diet, so I know that a lot of the people on the call are already, you know, that it's preaching to the choir because they're on board. But, you know, and I know you get this all the time, too. People who are already going down this path, they're surrounded by people in their life who they are now in the position of kind of like you and your, you know, the intervention.
Right.
And they need things to respond to and tools. And that's what another great thing about having this book is, a good resource for people to refer to, because it's so simply put. But if someone is interested in eating a plant-based diet, because I know there are going to be people listening to this call who are toying with the idea, where would you recommend they start? How would you recommend they begin? What kind of a pathway have you found successful?
Right. Well, there's two different types of personalities. There are the people that like to go cold tofurkey, and then there are those that like to take their time and kind of take one step at a time. And I actually happen to be the latter. I like to take it with this. I needed to take it one step at a time. So what I recommend is to honor your personality and honor what works best for you. But I also like to say, first and foremost, is to stay positive. You know, don't think about, oh, I can't have this, I can't have that. Forget about that. Think about what you can add in. Do you know there's like 10 different varieties of lentils on the shelves of the market that most likely you haven't even tried yet? You know, there's so many great, amazing finds in the plant-based kingdom that people don't know about. I kind of like to send my clients out on a mission to go find all these beautiful new foods that they haven't tried before and test the waters. Yeah, it should be all positive. It shouldn't be about what we're giving up. Because like you said, the whole crowding out theory, it's the same thing. If you start enjoying all these healthy foods, you know, if you find stuff you like, you're going to eat more of them. And then if you're eating more of those, you're going to eat less of the health-damaging food. So I like to think of it more of this optimistic, like just like get creative, explore, try new things. There's so many great things out there, and there's so many resources now. You know, if you go anywhere on the web, you could find a million really great whole food plant-based recipes now. It's just, it's an emerging field. It's exploding, I believe, and I'm feeling and seeing. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of resources like never before, and you just need to try new recipes and find things that you like. Like if you don't like broccoli but you love sweet potatoes, eat the sweet potatoes. You know, that's still going to benefit your health. Every single meal, every single bite counts. It counts towards your, you know, your future health. So I just like to take it simple and slow and listen to your body and find stuff that you really, really love to eat. Because you know what, really, the best way to anyone's diet or mind or anything is always through their stomach. My favorite thing is to have, you know, have dinner parties, especially with the skeptics, and have them come over. And, you know, I'll cook all day and all of the yummy plant food and stuff that they might not have had. And really, it's amazing how many people are like, wow, this is, I could eat this. You know, I hear that all the time.
Yeah, I like get to their heart, to their stomach, like win them over with great food. And that's a great idea. I love that idea of like a scavenger hunt. Like a list to send your clients out to go and look up certain foods that they may not even have known about.
Yeah, there's a whole world out there. And just to explore, I mean, how many vegetables do you normally get when you go to the store? You know, most people get
the same old stuff.
So if you kind of look a little bit to the right or a little bit to the left or a little bit under, you'll see something that you don't know what it is. Why don't you try it, you know? There's no harm or foul if you take it and see if you like it. Maybe you'll find something you like. At worst, you found something you didn't like so much.
Yeah, sometimes I do that to myself, too. Even as long as I've been eating this way, which has been a long, long time, I get in the same ruts. You know, there's the broccoli, there's the potatoes, there's the kale. There's like, well, let's look. There's something new and interesting. Let's just try that. So, well,
I think I've heard that people consume about, like, 2 to 3 different breakfasts a day or a week and about 3 to 4 lunches and about 5 or 6 dinners a week.
Yeah.
So if you kind of think about that, that's really not that much. You really do go to the same foods. So if you can kind of, like, get a few more outside of you, just kind of explore a little bit and add a little bit more to your repertoire, you're going to increase your variety and increase your nutrient intake.
Yeah. Well, so you said that you like to get people started by just showing them the world of food that they may not have been looked at before. So I bet you that the question comes up that there's probably anxieties people have about fulfilling their nutrient requirements. So what do you tell the people who are concerned about, gosh, can I get all the nutrients I need while eating a plant-based diet? So tell us a little bit about how you deal with that.
Good question. Well, I mean, the truth is we do have to be wary of that. You know, you do have to mind what's going into your body. That's very important. And anyone could be deficient. The thing is that whether you're plant-based or you're a complete omnivore and you eat, the standard American diet, no matter who you are, you still are at risk for a deficiency. It doesn't, just because you're following a whole food plant-based diet does not put you at an increased risk of deficiency by any means. Mm-hmm. So when I work with clients, of course I can have them fill out a food journal and then I can analyze them and look for the nutrient deficiencies. But when I'm talking to a group such as like tonight, you know, we have to look at kind of the general guidelines, of course, and that's exactly what, you know, the USDA does, or the Institute of Medicine does and everything when they're assigning general guidelines for all the different micronutrients. So we can do the same thing. So in a completely plant-based diet where you're not consuming any animal products whatsoever, you do need to consume a vitamin B12 supplement. That is a given. And the reason for that is that B12 is made by a microorganism, by bacteria in the soil, and the animals consume it, so they have that vitamin B12 in their meat when you eat them. But when you're on a plant-based diet, you're not getting that meat. You're not getting it. And we're also washing our produce. You know, our produce comes with that soil, but we're a very sterile society now, which is fine because, you know, I prefer my veggies.
I'm not getting polio anymore, so.
Or having, you know, soil in my teeth, grit in my teeth. So we need to be really careful of that. And I think people think, oh, I don't need to get my B12. But you really do. I mean, if you end up deficient in that, you won't even know until it's too late, and that could lead to neurological deficiencies. That's the only supplement that is really necessary on a complete plant-based diet. And the other one that comes up a lot, although it's not necessarily greater in vegans than it is in omnivores, is vitamin D. And they have a whole section of vitamin D, and that information is kind of like the vitamin du jour, and it's kind of like the hot topic, and everyone's talking about it. There's so much coming out about that. It's ridiculous. I wrote an article last year with Dina Aronson, another fellow plant-based RD, and the information even since then has changed dramatically. But ultimately, what I tell my clients is that you need to get tested for vitamin D deficiency at your next blood test. So it's not something to run out. It's an emergency. Go to your doctor now. And because, you know, we get vitamin D from the sun. But I'll go back to that. Okay. So first thing is to make sure you're not deficient. Get the vitamin D test.
So you think everyone should have that done at their next opportunity? Just ask the doctor.
I do. I think everyone should ask for a 25-hydroxy D test to make sure you're not deficient. Everyone, whether you're eating.
Well, can that be done just along with a standard, like, lipid profile, just, you know, on the checklist of what to include on a blood test? Okay,
yes,
so it's called a 25-hydroxy-D test?
25-hydroxy-D.
Okay.
25-hydroxy-vitamin-D. And it's something that it's becoming very standard because there's a worldwide deficiency right now. So anyway, you need to get tested to make sure it's not too low. And if it's low, the first line of defense should always be the sun. Now, the reason I think that there's so much deficiency, there's a lot of reasons. It's very easy to be deficient when you're at a certain latitude where you live, if you don't get a lot of sun. A lot of us wear way too much sunscreen all the time and don't have any time for the sun to actually penetrate our skin and get those UVB rays to convert the vitamin D, to make that vitamin D in your body. So, you need to get into the sun about 3 to 5 times a week for about 10 minutes. You should never turn red, but just get a little bit enough without sunscreen and as naked as you can without offending the neighbors so that you can get as much exposure, except for your face and your eyes. You want to keep those covered and protected.
Yeah. Okay.
But it is important to get out in the sun and try that first. And then I suggest getting tested again a few months later. And if you're still low, then I would recommend a supplement.
Okay. Well, what level do you recommend?
You know what it is, but I think it's changed since my book came out, actually. Not since it came out,
but
since
that was yesterday.
No, since I wrote it, which I submitted it a few months ago.
Yeah,
but
I'm figuratively speaking, it's just so soon. Things are really changing.
Oh, it's been changing a lot. It's not that drastic of a change, but I could actually look it up for you right now on my most recent one.
That'd be great.
Do you want to ask another question while I look it up?
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking then what form you recommend people take, because I know some of them aren't they animal-based and some non-animal-based, or how does that
work? If you're vegan for ethical reasons and you want to stick with the vitamin B2 instead of the D3, is an animal-based version.
That's right.
And you know, there's some research saying, oh, the D2 is not as effective as the D3, and there's some research saying that it's actually identical, and there's some research that's saying that you just need to have a little bit more of the D2. So, again, it's kind of like this game you have to play to find the right level for your body, but ideally you're not going to need any supplements at all, but some people do. If you're overweight, the fat actually prohibits or, like, it inhibits the sun from absorbing into the UVB rays from absorbing. And the darker your skin, the more you need, because it also is harder to get in because of the melanin. It blocks it. There's a lot of factors involved in vitamin D.
So what is the reason for this accelerating in the population, this deficiency?
Like I said, it's the lack of people aren't getting in the sun. They're wearing a lot of sunscreen. And I think people have become really afraid of the sun. I think that's what's happened, because people have, you know, the sunscreen ads and the sunscreen companies have become very profitable. But that's
so B12 and vitamin D, and that's it?
Possibly D. And that's for everyone. The D is for omnivores to vegans.
Yes. Got it. Hey, well, this isn't exactly a supplement, but I did. I have gotten a question just the other day from someone who was going to be traveling and having limited access to greens. And she asked me for my recommendation of a powdered green for travel. And I thought, that's a good question for Juliana. So do you have a powdered green that you recommend, even though fresh, of course, is best? But if you're in Timbuktu and it's all you got access to, is there something you would recommend someone carry along?
That's a good question. I don't know if I would recommend. I don't like adding supplements and powders and potions and all that stuff. But you know, I don't know. I can't even answer that question, actually.
Okay.
I would try to get access to the fresh stuff as much as possible. It's temporary, so I don't recommend actual companies or anything. I found the Institute of Medicine released a research on the vitamin D in 2011, so it's very recent, and they increased the RDA. From 400, it used to be 400 IU, but they just changed it to 600 IU. That's what you need to get in your diet every day, or from the sun. So deficiency is officially now less than 30 nanomoles per liter. But you really optimally want to get above 50 nanomoles per liter on your blood test. And now if they check the nanograms, it's 16 to 20. If they check the nanomoles, it's 40 to 50.
Okay. And you're saying you can get that 3 to 5 times a week in 10 minutes of good sun exposure?
Depending on the weather, depending on the season, depending on the
latitude.
Where you live. Yeah, there's a lot of factors. So that's why I highly recommend everyone gets their blood tests checked regularly.
Okay. How would someone know that they might be deficient in vitamin D? What would the symptoms be?
Oh, you know, you could end up with osteoporosis or osteopenia.
Okay, so it's calcium absorption issue.
There's a lot of different mechanisms. What's so interesting about vitamin D is that every single cell in your body have vitamin D receptors, which indicates to us that every single cell in your body requires vitamin D for optimal function. So that's why there's so much research. There's research connecting low vitamin D levels in the blood to higher incidence of certain cancers, and actually a lot of different cancers. There's evidence suggesting low vitamin D or D deficiency leading to even, you know, osteoporosis for sure, hip fractures possibly, all sorts of different diseases that you wouldn't even suspect, like high blood pressure, depression, MS, multiple sclerosis. There's definitely a clear correlation, a pretty clear association with a deficiency in D and having and multiple sclerosis, which is really interesting. And that's why they've also done these studies on latitude and where people live compared to the incidence of multiple sclerosis, and have found that those closer to the equator have less incidence of multiple sclerosis. So there's a whole autoimmune category that comes in there. Yeah. It's fascinating. So, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Well, you know, it's obvious that the people who are either wanting to turn to plant-based nutrition or who are of a vegan mindset or are aspiring to a vegan diet are going to want to get this book. So what about someone who doesn't want to become vegan and, you know, doesn't have a desire like that, but how can those people benefit from your work? What's a good
way? I get this question all the time. I have people coming to me saying, I really need your help. I've got, you know, stage 4 metastatic blah, blah, blah cancer, or I've got, mm-hmm. you know, I've had a triple bypass. I've had blah, blah, blah. I don't want to be vegan. Will you still work with me? And my answer is always the same. Absolutely, because my goal is to get you healthier. How do we get healthier? It's not by adopting a vegan diet per se, although that is optimal. It's not necessary. You can still increase, like I said, that whole yin-yang theory. I want to help people get more of the health-promoting foods, the foods that fight cancer and fight heart disease and fight for your body to stay healthy and keep your immunity functioning optimally. And then I also want to minimize the stuff that are actually promoting your disease. So absolutely anyone that wants to be healthy should read this book and can absolutely benefit from all this information, because it is overall a book that will help you lead to better health and give you the tools that you can use to work your way on that pathway towards health.
Yes. Yes, and that's precisely how it comes off. And I've only been able to glance through, but it is that it's very positive and proactive too. Hey, we got a couple questions that have come in on the webcast here, so I'm going to just take a minute away from that. And we have here from Jim and Louise. Here's a question that says, "Hi, Juliana. My biggest issue with any meal is and has been moderation, and my metabolism seems slower now. How do we deal with this? A
great question.
Plant-based diet."
Great question. Hi to you guys. Well, here's the thing. A slow metabolism, ironically, is ideal, because what the longevity studies show is that the slower your metabolism is, the longer you're going to live. So people actually try to, some people on this, you know, that are really, you know, proactive and on that path, mm-hmm. try to decrease their caloric intake, try to intentionally minimize their metabolism. But I know that's not what the question is. I just wanted to point that out because it's fascinating. Mm-hmm. And we talk about that in the movie a lot, and I talk about that in the book.
Yeah, but I saw that referred to with Dr. Furman.
Yes, uh-huh, yes. Yeah, I've talked to Dr. Furman about this a lot. It's a fascinating concept. But what you guys are asking is more about, like, keeping your weight down, I'm assuming, because that has to do with maintaining an ideal body weight. And the truth is, we need to start tuning into your signals. And I talk a lot about that in this book and all of my talks, that the most important thing is what your body needs. So portions are important when it comes to your body. So I can't tell you need to have 2 cups of quinoa and 1 cup of broccoli for the perfect dinner. You need to know that when you're hungry, it's time to eat. And when you're eating, you eat slowly, you listen, you chew your food, you eat until you feel satiated and you feel good. You should feel full and comfortable. You shouldn't feel stuffed. So when you do that and you listen to your inner signals, which is very hard for us to do, I mean, I'm telling you from experience of, what, 30 years on every diet known to man and learning how to not listen to my own signals it's 10 o'clock, it's time for my mid-morning snack and all that nonsense. We have to get rid of all that talk in the background and just tune in. Am I hungry? No. Okay, I'll wait till I'm hungry. Because sometimes we eat, a lot of times we eat, for reasons other than hunger. For instance, we're around people that are eating something that looks really good. Oh, I'll just have some. Or we put too much on our plate and we figure I should just finish it because we were trained to clean our plates. There's so many other factors that come into play when you're actually sitting there and eating that it's really doing us a big disservice. And what we need to do, we have to have an evolution back to where we listen to our inner needs. Our body knows exactly what it needs to thrive. It knows exactly how many calories, how many grams of protein. It knows exactly what it needs to thrive. So what you need to do is really quiet down all the other voices and all the things you think you're supposed to do and listen to what you need. So mm-hmm. if you're eating too many portions, stop eating too much portions. That probably means that you're full faster than you stop eating. So when you're full or you feel good, stop. And that doesn't mean that if at 9 o'clock at night you're starving and you can't sleep, that doesn't mean you have to not eat, although it's better to go to bed on an empty stomach. But if you're hungry, you should always have a little bit to eat, but not overeat, because overeating is harmful.
Yeah, and this is actually perfect to the whole concept of whole foods plant-based diet. In perfect timing, I released a video today where I responded to a question of one of my clients who said, how do I know how much to eat? Some days I'm hungrier, some days I'm less hungry. And my response was, well, that's as good animals. That's what we're going to do. We're going to have varying appetites. But when we eat a whole foods plant-based diet, that's when we can rely on our hunger and fullness signals and not cause us to gain weight. But that's the catch there. You know, it can't be.
Oh, that's such a good point, too. That's the point. The point is that we've got abundant, I think almost, I would say, like the vast majority of, especially in the United States and the Western cultures, the vast majority of us are currently addicted to food, and we don't even realize it because you can't realize it because you're eating those foods perpetually. You know, cheese, for example, is a perfect example. It's got a compound that when you put in your body, it's called casomorphine. So the casein, which is the primary protein of the milk, the dairy, and it's concentrated in cheese, when you consume that, your brain releases serotonin, and it makes you feel really good. And it's like, ooh, this is, it's really,
wow.
Ooh, I like this. And then you
no
want to consume it
don't.
Again.
Yeah,
and the more you have, the more you want. And the same thing with cheese, is it also applies to meat and all dairy and oil or fatty foods and sugar and salt. So all of those foods, the more you have of that, the more you want. And then what happens is you are blinded and you can't hear your own inner signals. Like you said, you can't hear them because you're craving food. And cravings is not hunger. Cravings are very different than hunger. And we have to learn to quiet our minds and listen to what it is. What are we really asking for? Are we asking to fulfill a craving, or are we really truly physically, physiologically hungry?
Yeah,
that's a very good
advice.
Point. Yeah.
That's excellent advice, and I know that there's Dr. Bernard has done some work with that and has some excellent video and books.
Yeah,
about
he's in
that.
Our film. Actually, he talks just about that in the movie. In
that food addiction,
the
chocolate cheese, and I've got that video
up on my
website.
Yeah,
too.
He talks about that mechanism with the cheese.
Well, speaking of, too, I wanted to, since we brought Dr. Bernard into the conversation at the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, everybody on the phone, there's a 21-day vegan kickstart coming up that we're going to be coaching on beginning September 5th. So if you want to know where to find that, just send me an email and I'll send you the link, because Dr. McDougall and I have a page in there, and I'm in there a lot for support. So there's opportunities. And you know what was so good to have, just like you were talking about, Julianne, about all these things surrounded by us, cultural influences of what to eat, you know, advertisement, magazines, everything. That's why it's so valuable to have as many resources as possible that are going to be supportive for healthful change, such as your book. Like I tell people, yes, purge your diet shelf, but don't purge the whole food plant-based, here's what I can eat shelf. Keep that one well stocked, because, you know, it, keeping mindful of all this stuff, it just really helps with that transition that can be hard.
Absolutely, absolutely. I have a whole section in my book about how to stock your kitchen, by the way, speaking of which. And
I saw that. And plus, okay, what would how to stock, like, you know, shopping list and
yeah, it's like everything
kind of
that you should try to keep always on your shelf and
Yay.
Always in your fridge and always in your freezer, stuff that'll keep you, so like at 5 o'clock when you're starving, you could just pop something, you could just quickly make some dinner. And all of my recipes are like that. I'm not a chef. I can't believe I wrote a cookbook and then this whole 40-plus recipes in this book, because I'm just not a chef. But it's just funny, and people keep asking me to write recipes, and I'm like, well, that's not what I do. But I really do like to make simple, healthy, wholesome food, and it, like, quick, because I don't have time.
Yeah,
I've got
that's
kids.
How I am,
I've got
too.
A crazy schedule. Yeah, so I don't like to – I mean, I love tasting it. I enjoy it. I appreciate it, but I don't have time to do it myself.
And I got to tell you, I love this chapter. I started slapping sticky notes all over this chapter. It's like, stop counting and start eating. And that's just like so central to, you know, this break free of the diet mentality. As long as you're eating the right stuff, that's what you get to do. Hey, there's another question here from Bethany, and she says, R.E. the scavenger hunt, which you were talking about a way to get people going. She said she has an idea here. Local vegan society chapter should set up a shopping buddies, menu planning, mentors for people new to veganism wanting to transition, like a volunteer outreach program team. People could take turns sponsoring newbies. That's a good idea.
Huh? Sounds great.
Well, you have On to Fitness here, which is my area specialty, and along with, of course, the importance of number one for changing your health is what you put in your mouth and what you eat, but a close second is moving your body. So I know you've got a chapter about exercise because you're a fitness lover too. So, and you were a personal trainer for many years. So how does exercise and fitness fit into the book?
Yeah, I you can't talk about health without talking about exercise. It's just, you know, as it's extremely important. And people think that if you exercise, you'll lose weight, and that's not the case. Exercise will help sustain weight loss, but the food is the most important thing with that. I just have to throw that out there. However, on every other biochemical, physiological factor with respect to food, you have to consider exercise. Exercise has to be a part of your day. The whole statement of use it or lose it could not be more true. If you don't move, you're going to, you know, it's like move it or lose it. You're gonna lose your flexibility, your range of motion, and you're gonna lose your muscle and your bones. And like the most important thing for osteoporosis and bone fractures is really exercise, more so than your diet. I mean, putting stress on your bones and your muscles every day is something that will lead to a longer but healthier life. It's not about how long you live. It's really about the quality of life. And when quality of life is concerned, you really do need to consider moving. And I do talk about all the factors of fitness, like what is fitness, and then how to implement it into your life. And I really think that no matter who you are, I used to have clients in their 80s, you know, and I used to train them, and it was amazing. People would be so delicate with them, but I wouldn't. I would, like, push them a little bit all the time, and I saw these ridiculously amazing results. I mean, these older people were doing things that you would never expect, like walking lunges across the floor, and you know, people, you know, and the more they did, the better they felt. So I know personally, and obviously I like to base everything I teach on science, but I saw it myself, and it was really exciting to watch how much healthier people can be just by including exercise in their daily life. So I have a whole chapter on how to include it, why to include it, the benefits, the mental benefits and all that. And I also have a chapter on the sports nutrition. I work with a lot of elite athletes. And what's really cool, so on the flip side of that, yes, exercise is important for health. But the other reason, the other factor is that your workouts and your fitness level, and anyone that's an athlete or trying to succeed in any kind of fitness event, is absolutely reliant upon the fuel of which you're consuming. So it's the fuel and it's the recovery. If you're not recovering well, you're not going to have a good next event or next workout. So they're interchangeable. I mean, you cannot have one without the other. Exercise and nutrition are forever married.
Yes,
so you know,
I
talk about
that still when you were talking about people's lives changing, because it, the health component, but then when you see the vitality, that's quality of life, and that's someone's happiness and their productivity and their whole state of being improved by moving their body. So what a great combination you've got. I'm really glad you had a fitness chapter in the book too. So even though it's a food plan book, it's also doesn't leave out that important fitness component. I got a whole bunch more questions here coming in on a webcast, so I'm going to go on to Lori. She says, my doctor says I have borderline iron deficient anemia. He also wants me to take calcium and D vitamins, but I don't know which supplements to try. I eat tons of kale, lentils, but no tofu. Any suggestions? And then she says, which B12 supplement do you like? So let's go back to her iron deficient question. I bet you've gotten that a lot, huh?
I get that all the time, and what's so cool is that you look at the research, and there is no greater incidence of iron deficiency anemia in people that are vegan versus people that are omnivores. So it's not a vegan disease. It's not, you know, it's not, and everyone needs to think about that. But there's ways to manipulate your food to improve your iron status. I'm talking about people that are deficient and people that want to prevent deficiency. So in order to do that, you instead of taking iron supplement, by the way, those are really can be absolutely harmful. Iron is an oxidative compound. So if you're taking iron in, you're actually putting this pro-oxidative state in your blood, which you don't want to have to do. But if you're deficient, you know, you need to be careful. So if you need to be on supplements, make it as short a period of time as possible. But what you can do with your food in addition is, A, cut out dairy, because dairy causes iron deficiency anemia. It's definitely related to iron deficiency anemia, which is why we're not supposed to feed our children, our babies, cow's milk for that first year of their life. And, yeah, so you're not supposed to, because it can lead to the anemia. So, first of all, cut out the dairy. Second of all, you want to enhance the iron absorption as much as possible. How do you do that? You look at foods that are high in iron, and you eat them at the same time as foods that are high in vitamin C. That's one way. So, for instance, eat your beans. Actually, me and Chef AJ just came out with our new episode of The Chef and the Dietitian today, and we talk a lot about that.
Oh.
About the, yeah, we made a bean dip, and there's something in there high in vitamin C. I can't remember now, but it complements each other, and the vitamin C helps the iron to be absorbed. So you can make your green smoothie with strawberries or something else high in vitamin C, or a citrus juice, and put your leafy green vegetables in there, and then it's going to be better absorbed. Or you can make a soup with lemon and some leafy greens or beans or something like that that's going to help the absorption as well.
Okay.
Also, certain things like I don't eat your high iron foods with coffee every day or with tea every day. Like, try to keep it individually, because there are certain compounds in the tea and coffee and certain other vegetables that block the absorption. So you want to kind of, I can go into detail with that with somebody if you really need to get that precarious. And some people do. Most people don't. But there are different foods that block and are certain foods that enhance it. Like leavening bread, for instance, helps the absorption. Mm. Or soaking your grains, you know, like sprouting your grains and legumes and stuff helps the absorption of the vitamin, the iron. So there's different kind of factors you could play in your food, but I really, the most important one, I think, is to try to combine the iron-rich foods with the vitamin C-rich foods. I think that would be the most important thing.
Okay,
and
yeah,
I would stay on that supplement as little as possible. And are you really anemic, or are you, like, borderline anemic? What does that mean? You know, do you,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's variable, and I'd have to look at the person by, case by case.
Yes.
I don't want to generalize and say, oh, don't ever worry about iron deficiency.
Well, you gave some good examples about maximizing your absorption, which is a case with, even with the vitamin B12, I know, sometimes it's not so much supply as much as absorption. And there's another question here from Jan on B12. She says, are there early signs of low B12? I'm amazed how many of my patients, I work in physical therapy, that eat meat and also need B12 shots. I would think they would not need an additional B12. So is that like an absorption issue?
Absolutely, it's absorption. And what happens is, as you age, or if you have any kind of gastrointestinal inflammation, you can actually minimize the absorption of the B12. So a lot of people, a lot of seniors, a lot of people with any kind of gastrointestinal disease have to take intramuscular vitamin B12 or large doses of it throughout the time. But there are no, let me just say this, there are no early signs of B12 deficiency commonly found. It's something that you'll find when it's too late. So I urge everyone to be a responsible plant-based eater and take a vitamin B12 supplement if they are not eating any animal products.
Okay.
Oh, and in terms of what kind, by the way, look for a methylcobalamin as opposed to a cyanocobalamin. There's two different types of compounds that you can find in the stores. It's harder to find the one I'm recommending, the methylcobalamin, and that's M, like Mary, E-T-H-Y-L, cobalamin. And that the reason for that is the other one, the cyanocobalamin, breaks down and there's a cyanide compound, a residue that is left in the body. And I would prefer people don't have the
cyanide. Oh, that's
cyanide.
Interesting to know about. Yeah. And that's another time. Last week I put up a video from Dr. McDougall about vitamin B12 on my blog, and he talks about his recommendations and the whole problem with B12. So, again, if anybody wants to see that, just pop on over to LannyMuleath.com, and there's it's just a couple pages back on B12. You can do a search in there. It's a great video by Dr. McDougall, and it just ties in with what Juliana is saying exactly. Okay, here's another question. Lori asks, can you talk about tofu and soy? Because I'm not sure if it's good for us or not, and I bet you get that one all the time, too.
That, you know what? That is another really popular one, and I really investigated deeply, you know, having kids and everything. It's a very good question, and here's what we know. It's not, the science is not 100% clear yet, okay? It never really is 100%, but it's not even really weighing on one side. So what I've gathered from my research and from talking to the leading experts in this field is that there's nothing wrong with having a little bit of soy. And on the other side of that, just because you're plant-based does not mean you should be on a soy-based diet. It's not a soy-based diet. It's a plant-based diet. And some people get all excited and think, oh, yeah, I'm supposed to have tofu and tempeh and soy milk and soy this and edamame. And then you can overdo it on the soy. And I don't recommend that at all. So what we do know is this. Whole food versions of soy, and I include in that edamame, the soybeans, the original form, tofu, tempeh, and soy milk even, are fine. And I would consume that happily, comfortably, but not in a large doses. I don't think you should have large doses of anything. There's nothing that is really, you don't want to have one food, you don't want to have a mono diet. That's not healthy. So I would have some of those whole foods. Now, on the flip side, every time you see research, and something just came out the other day about this, about isolated soy protein isolates. They're in everything. They're in bars. They're in, you can see soy protein isolates in everything. Those protein powders. Yeah, it's really ubiquitous.
In processed foods.
It's a processed food that's found in other processed foods. I do not recommend consuming that because that's where you, A, don't see any benefits, and, B, you can potentially see harm. But there are some benefits of eating a little bit of soy. You know, it's got those phytoestrogens that can be healthy, and there's also the a lot of omega-3 fatty acids, which is a good fat for you to consume.
Well, you're recommending them in a way that has the fiber coming along with it, which is back to the beauty of the whole foods. And you know what cracks me up, Juliana, is when people – they're getting information about eating more plant-based, more whole foods, and immediately attack the soy, but not think twice about the burger on their plate, like all all that's
well,
going on.
Well, I had that yesterday.
Bed,
I
like,
had a oh, yeah. I had a consultation the other day, and the exact same thing. Well, I'm so afraid of the soy. I'm so afraid of the soy because I don't want to blah, blah, blah. And then she's telling me how she's eating, you know, she prefers ground beef. She won't have ground turkey or any or soy because it has to be ground beef because she's so afraid of the soy. And I'm like, do you understand what you're saying? It's so interesting that people – I mean, and the other thing that she said that blew my mind too, and I didn't say anything, but because I try to keep an open mind and don't want people to think that I can't help them just because they're not, you know, open-minded.
Well,
she said, oh, I heard this thing on the
–
Pardon?
You have to be strategical about this, you know,
right.
Individually, yeah.
Right, and she had said something about how she saw on the news that these grains, these whole grains, end up with little rat hairs in there, and she couldn't, she was so disgusted she never wants to eat, like, oats and stuff like that again. And all I could think about, and then she tells me how she eats the ground beef, and I'm thinking, do you know what's in your ground beef? I don't think you realize what's in your ground beef. If you really want to be disgusted, let me tell you, but I didn't.
Save that for next time
it's
you
funny.
See
it. Yeah, it's just funny what people focus on, what they focus their attention on. It's fascinating.
Well, here's another good one, and I know a little bit about what you think about this from what I've seen you read and write, but I'd like to have you address it on the call because it comes up, and it's all about the oils and the coconut oil madness. And I see fitness experts saying all the time how coconut oil is so good for you. And Erica asks, in your opinion, is coconut oil a good oil to use for cooking, even though it is a saturated fat? And she has a second question, but let's stick with the coconut oil because I know you answered that in the book, but let's address it because that's a big one.
Well, what's funny, I did answer it in the book, and now I'm not 100% sure about this now. Okay, what I see in the book is that no oil is good oil, and coconut oil specifically is very high in saturated fat, like you said. Now, I actually was debating this physician that was at Vegetarian Summerfest as well, and the way he spoke about it, I was, you know, he really knew the answer. So I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to research this when I get home. So I've started kind of dipping back deep into the coconut oil research, and I'm not convinced that it's healthy. I'm not saying it's healthy. I do absolutely stick by my recommendation to eat a no oil diet or a very low oil, very low. And if you're healthy and you're active and you're exercising and you eat a little bit of oil here and there, I think that could be fine. We don't have research showing that people on a whole food plant-based diet that eat a teeny bit of oil have any higher risk of disease than those that are eating no oil. So we don't know that because the research is either on people eating the standard American diet or it's on people that have eaten this diet without fat, like the McDougall work and Dr. Esselstyn's work. That was with a no-oil diet, but these are people that were really sick. So we don't have good research on people that eat a whole food plant-based diet but have a little bit of fun foods or whatever, a little bit of the oil or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I'm not 100% sure, and especially with athletes. Athletes need so much concentrated calories. So what I always say, and I'll stick with what I said in the book for this, if you're trying to lose weight or if you're not healthy, absolutely avoid oil as much as possible. However, if you're healthy, then I haven't seen evidence, there is no evidence to say that a little tiny bit.
Yeah, I think the qualifier there is if you're healthy. Which also included issues with weight, because as we know from Dr. Esselstyn's work with people who are sick, and Dr. McDougall too, the changes that they can see by eliminating pressed oils or free fats like that. Well, here's another question from Shirley about sugar, so I bet you get that too. She says,
oh, yeah.
Do I need to eliminate all sugar substitutes like agave, maple syrup, honey, stevia, etc.? I've been eating plant-based for 2+ years, but weight has plateaued. Good.
Oh, good question. Then absolutely, I would eliminate the oils, the concentrated fat. It's 100% fat. It's if you have a half a cup of oil, that's 1,000 extra calories. That's a lot of calories. Same with sugar. If you concentrate out and you get into the sweetener, a refined sweetener, it's a lot of extra calories. And people always say, I hear this more than I like to. Oh, it's just a little bit here and a little bit. It's just a little bit. But guess what? That adds up. And I don't think people really realize how much they're actually putting in their meals and how much those calories are contributing to their diet. If you are trying to lose weight, cut out all refined foods, cut out all oils, and concentrate on those whole foods. And I promise you, when you cut that out for a couple of weeks, it might be you might miss some stuff, but after that, you won't even want that stuff anymore because you'll find that all of a sudden a sweet potato tastes like pure sugar because your taste buds will adapt. The taste buds are definitely capable, and I see it all the time, of reversing and going back to how we were as babies when we had these fresh, you know, wonderful taste buds that can taste food. You know, the more salt you have, the more salt you need. You adjust. So if you adjust the other way, you won't even need those sweeteners. And it'll happen automatically if you just reduce it. Now, if you really need something sweet, I recommend, and me and Chef AJ always talk about this, going to like a whole food source, like the dates. So taking dates and turning it into a date paste or a date syrup is a good way to make. I mean, she makes these remarkable, like ridiculously delicious and decadent desserts that are way too sweet for me. I can't even eat those anymore because my taste buds have changed so much. But you can do all sorts of stuff with dates. And I even think that I say in my book that maple syrup is okay. Now, agave, on the other hand, is not okay because of the way it's metabolized in the liver differently, and it is something that I do not recommend. I do not recommend agave.
Okay. Do you have details about agave in the book?
I do.
Okay, great.
I think I do. I do in the second book.
In my cookbook,
I have a thing on agave. Wait, I'm checking my book. I'm pretty sure I have it in there.
Oh, awesome. Another thing I like to
do is
I keep like frozen fruit in the freezer. So sometimes if like after you need a little sweet, I'll like pop frozen cherries out or frozen pineapple chunks. And it is amazing. I call it realimentation. As you get your taste buds away from processed, really concentrated foods, fruit just really does it. So.
Yep, it's true. It's amazing. It's amazing. And everyone has the same experience. The biggest sweet eaters. I used to be the biggest sweet addict, and now I honestly don't even want any. I don't even want it. It's not that I'm avoiding
it
or trying to be, you know, good. I just don't even want it. And I used to love that stuff. It's crazy.
Well, here's another common question, too. What foods, this is from Mary Beth, what foods support a hypothyroid?
Support a hypothyroid, help
to bring it back to balance?
Oh no! Well, that is something that should not be done just with nutrition. That needs to be addressed with the doctor.
Are there foods? Okay, go ahead. Definitely see your doc. Go ahead.
Anytime you've got a hypo or a hyperthyroid condition, you need to work with medications for that. But you can also have a healthy diet to avoid any kind of damage. And, you know, it could also be you have to address the cause. Why do you have hypo or hyperthyroid? But that's not a nutritional problem. That's not really a chronic disease from nutrition most of the time.
Okay, let me refresh here. We've got just a couple more minutes here. Man, you are just rolling through these, Juliana. Thank you so much. This is great. Someone asked a question about arborio rice. I know arborio rice is a short grain white rice and it's not milled as much as the usual white rice, but is it really a good nutrition source?
If it's milled at all, then I wouldn't say it's an optimal source. I would go for the whole grain. I always opt for the whole grain when possible. Now, I'm not saying that if you have a little bit of that, you know, with your big old fat salad and, you know, lentils and all that, that it's going to be harmful to you. But if you want to look at the spectrum, that's not going to be the healthiest because you want to have as much fiber as possible. Fiber is the king of good health, really. I mean, the more fiber and water foods, not just from like a Metamucil or whatever, but those foods are what are going to promote health. So I would always go away from the more refined and always go towards the more whole version of everything.
Okay, good. That's simple to remember. Here, Lori asks about vegan kids, and I know you have a chapter about kids in here. You cover so many segments of the population. You've got pregnancy, you've got athletes, you've got seniors, you've got children. But Lori's question is, do vegan kids since birth need any special nutritional monitoring?
Do vegan kids need any nutritional monitoring, you said?
Yeah, special nutritional monitoring. Like, I assume it means like watching, monitoring for what your results might be or how you're doing.
Well, first of all, I think all kids need to be specially monitored with their diet because most kids eat horribly, and it's not just because of parents, because as a parent, you know, my kids get fed, you know, the most horrible stuff at camp and school when I'm packing them a full lunch. So it's not 100% in your, so you absolutely have to watch what they're taking in, and you absolutely have to follow, you know, make sure they're getting the same labs that you're getting, and make sure if they're completely plant-based or vegan, I would definitely give them a B12 supplement and check their D. I would treat them like little people because they are little adults, but you also need to look at the person. Are they growing well? That's one of the most important things we look at children. Are you growing the way you're supposed to be growing? You know, are you following your growth curve? Not meaning if you are supposed to, you're 25th percentile and you stay 25th percentile, that means you're too little, it's because of your diet. I'm saying that if you're 25th percentile, that you stay 25th percentile in, you know, your entire childhood. So it's about being able to grow in height and have energy. Kids should be bouncing off the walls. You know, that's sort of like the fabulous and the most stressful part about having kids. But they should be bouncing off the walls. They should have their good energy. And all of those factors are the most important ways to know whether they're getting proper proper energy. Now, in terms of nutrients, you know, you do need to stay on top of them. Some of the vegan dietitians are also starting to be more concerned about the nutrients like iodine and what else? There's a couple of other ones that people are kind of concerned with. But if you're checking your labs, I would just make sure you get your labs checked. You're making sure you're giving them a wide variety of foods, making sure they get a B12 supplement, and they're tested, then you should be fine. And, you know, you got to look at each person on an individual case. But absolutely be on top of what your kid is eating. At least at home, make sure everything they eat is as good as possible and that you're sending them out with proper food. And I have a whole chapter on techniques for keeping snacks around and what kinds of food kids might like. Kids are, honestly, having kids has been the hardest challenge of my life. To get them eat healthy has been the biggest challenge of my entire life. So I hear you, but you do need to be on top of them.
And I have seen some of your postings on Facebook about what your kids are encountering in school and how horrific it is, just what they're met up with all the time.
I mean, I'm at the board now. I'm starting to do stuff like go to the board of the school to complain about this. They're giving our kids M&Ms or jelly beans or Skittles for doing well on play practice or for, like, having a good day of behavior, and then they don't understand why the kids are acting crazy and hyper, you know, and they give, you know, it's no such thing as a special treat anymore. Kids get cupcakes and birthdays, and every day there's something going on. So it's really a battle, and we all need to be very vocal in our schools. I'm learning, and I'm doing
that's
it myself
absolutely
now.
That's true. And I'm really glad you addressed that in the book, because I think I was talking to Jeff Novick about that, about there's really a need for a parent's guide for wading through trying to have your kids eat healthy when the whole tide is swimming against us with what's out there.
Literally. It's hard enough to vouch for yourself, but when it's your kids, it's a whole other planet. It's challenging.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're up at the top of the hour. There's still lots more questions, so can I just squeak one more out here, Nancy?
Of course, please.
This is Nancy, and she says, is there a dietary way to stop and or reverse osteoarthritis? And I know that's a common concern, so.
You know, we have seen such great results with this type of eating and osteoarthritis. Absolutely, there are definitely dietary components that contribute to osteoarthritis. And what I've seen is people incidentally, McDougall has talked about this, people have seen these incidents where it'll like spontaneously just kind of stop, like the pain goes away. It's amazing. So yes, absolutely, this diet that I have delineated in this book will absolutely contribute to better joint health. You can't rebuild cartilage. That's physiologically impossible. Mm-hmm. But you can, you know, prevent the pain and the swelling, the inflammation. Basically, I would say that most chronic disease, if not all, has one thing in common, and that's inflammation. So if you do everything you can to decrease inflammation via diet, then you're not going to have the pain and the chronic disease, the progression of disease as much as you would. If you do everything, you know, if you really focus on eating these whole foods, your body is systemically, the whole body is going to decrease in inflammation, which is going to lead to less pain, less suffering, and less disease.
Well, that was an excellent answer, and I tell you what, we've got a lot more questions here, so I want to thank everyone who's come to the call and submitted questions, been here, present, and I'm sorry if we didn't get to your question, but we did have a lot of them, and especially thank you to Juliana. You've been such a gracious guest, just full of information, and I want to tell everybody, you've got to pick this up, The Complete Idiot's Guide to Plant-Based Nutrition by our own Juliana Heber, and you can get this, Juliana, I've got this linked on the page where people signed up for so they can get it to Amazon. So is that the best place for people to pick this up?
It is. You know, Barnes & Noble, I was actually there today, and they're just kind of like not getting it on the shelves fast enough, and some of the places are actually selling out, which is really exciting. But Amazon is great to buy it online. I actually just set up my website, so if you want a signed copy, you can go directly through my website.
Oh, wow. Very fun. So how do we do that? We go to your site and then click
my
on
site
it.
My site is www.toyourhealthnutrition.com or also plantbaseddietitian.com. They all go to the same place. But, yeah, on my site, you'll see, like, links to it. But if you go to services and you scroll all the way down to the bottom, you can order it through me, and I'll send it to you myself with a big personalized lot of love.
That is nice. And also, for everyone to know that she has the DV out to your health, and where can we get this at your website, too, or where do people get the To Your Health DVD?
No, my DVDs are available on www.goingveg.net, And that's also linked on my site. So you can find that on my site. But even if you Google just To Your Health, like official trailer on YouTube, you'll see the – oh, no, but that's not where to get it. You can see the trailer if you want. And that's also on my website, too, under books and DVDs. Or you could just go to www.goingveg.net and order your copy today.
Okay. All these resources to help us be live healthy, happy lives. And, Juliana, thank you so much again. You guys, obviously we come away with so much after reading this book, and what an hour. So I should have the recording ready for you, hopefully by early tomorrow, so you can listen again. I know we always get so much more out of these a second round through. So thank you, everyone, for coming to the call, and thank you, Juliana.
Thank you so much, Lanny. Take care.
Okay, good night, everybody.
Good night.